On this episode of the People Stack podcast, Rob and I interviewed Kathy Seabuck. So she is founder and CEO of Marketecture and is author of Waves of Change, Growth Mindset Tools for Connected Balance. She is a coach, a speaker, a writer, and this episode was an absolute blast for Rob and I to put together to interview Kathy, and I hope it's a blast for you to listen to you as well. We covered lots of topics around building a growth mindset. We really dove in and talked about what is a growth mindset, what does that mean, what is connected balance, what does that mean, how do we discover our core values, how do we become an even more curious learner, and how do we do all of this without weaponizing any of it, by the way. Sometimes we weaponize growth mindset, like, oh my God, yeah, give me negative feedback. It's like, no, that's not what we're talking about at all. How do we stop being colorblind to the red flags? We've all done it. We turn the red to yellow. How do we turn that around? How do we do all of this? And how do we take care of our mind, our body, our spirit, all of the pieces of it? And really, one of the fun topics that kept coming back, one of the core underlying messages is adult. This is what adulting really is. It's not about paying the bills. It's not about taking the garbage out. Adulting really means taking charge of your life and being in the driver's seat. And so it's about giving ourselves permission to be badass, giving ourselves permission to take a nap, giving ourselves permission to be spiritual if we want to be. So we covered so many different fun topics, again, all around that core concept of either connected balance or growth mindset, or the intersection of the two of them. So really soak this up. This is one that you're probably going to want to listen to many times. Maybe listen to it once just while you're on a walk, while you're outside in nature, and then listen to it again when you could have a pen and paper and capture. So many wonderful pieces of wisdom that Kathy shared. So enjoy. Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where I share insights on how to upgrade your career as a technical leader. I'm Jen Funk. I am a career coach and co-CEO of the People Stack, along with my husband, Rob Allen. If you'd like to find out more about what we do here at the People Stack, please check out our free training at training.thepeoplestack.com. You're going to learn the four strategic and mindset shifts that our clients have used to command 300, 400, 500K plus salaries as tech leaders while living lives of abundance, freedom, and joy. And now, without further ado, please enjoy today's episode. All right. So we are really excited today to have Kathy Seabuck on. She is founder and CEO of Marketecture and author of Waves of Change, Growth Mindset Tools for Connected Balance. There's so much that we're going to dive into today, Kathy. Great to have you on.
Thanks so much for having me. Hi, guys.
Hello, hello. So let's start. We like to have our podcast guests introduce themselves. So in your voice, in your words, what do you do at Marketecture? What do you do in general? And then we'll go from there.
Well, I like to start with, Rob, I'm going to steal from you, work is play. And so I really enjoy working with people and helping them tell their story at Marketecture. I've been at it about 5 years. I left corporate IT after 25 plus years in sales and marketing leadership roles. And now I have returned back to my roots when I started my career in startups. You guys remember Lotus Notes? Yeah. So I was around in the startup community before startup community was cool, and then went to enterprise tech for 20 plus years and worked on that side of the house in sales and marketing. And now I help startups, small business, and nonprofits really market their stories, connect with their customers, and provide strategic business direction plans. You name it, I would be considered a fractional CMO.
Perfect. That's really, really helpful. And forgive the potentially silly question. I'm sure people are wondering, does the M in architecture stand for marketing or something else?
So where that came from is having spent so much time in tech, architecture is usually leading, whether it's software, hardware, whatever. And I was, a marketing communications person. So I was like, well, what if we were going to create a marketecture, which was a schematic of how you're going to, build your marketing communications plan. And so I was like, can I just actually swap that out? Ironically, there's a company out there that is an architecture firm that, from an architectural drawing perspective, but obviously we're in two different business, sectors. So that wasn't a problem. And people really struggle with it. They're like, and I'm like, architecture with an M. And they're like,
There
and
you
then when they realize what I do, then it kind of connects. And so we're building, we're transforming, and that's what we do.
go. Awesome. Awesome. So I'm seeing the sort of Venn diagram of Kathy Seebeck kind of come together. So we have the tech aspect of it, we have the marketing aspect of it, but then we also have the growth mindset piece of it. So we literally just met in person, everybody. We were connected through a mutual connection. But even just in, what you've sent to us and the materials and the little bit of research that we've done on you, it seems like the growth mindset piece of it is the one that's kind of taking off for you, and that really feels like closest to heart for you. Would that be correct to say?
That is correct. I think the biggest wake-up call I had was, how many of us, including myself at the time, operate on autopilot, where we're just, day in, day out, going to work, doing our thing, personal, professional, whatever, versus really taking a pause and saying, am I doing what I like to do? Am I where I want to be? And having that kind of moment where, call it midlife or a quarter life crisis, whatever you want to call it, but we're on a wheel of doing what we were told or belief system that was prescribed or whatever, where are we really in personal alignment with where we want, who we are and what we want to do? And so the growth mindset piece came from a lot of crash and burn learning or life experience learning to say, this isn't really where I want to be or what I want to do. And I think I can, get to a different place as long as I look inside and take some ownership of my own stuff. And so, it's not about I think therapy or, all of the stuff that comes with life coaching and some of those things. It's really about just getting grounded in yourself and your truth and about being honest with yourself about I'm happy, I'm not happy, and that happiness is mine. And I need to open my mind and look at the positive side of life to own and build what I want versus, the blame and shame game where I can't do this or I don't do that or so and so is making me do this. And, the bottom line is we are all free thinkers and have choice. And so while some choices are harder than others and everything has a cost or a trade-off, it's like that's on us. We can either, run our lives or our lives can run us. And I woke up and I was like, I think my life is running me. And so that was the end of that.
Awesome. It's great to have that wake up call moment. Let's talk about growth mindset. So let's get really basic here. What is growth mindset to you? And when someone fully embraces it, what would you expect to see in their life?
I think my personal definition of a growth mindset really is to be a curious learner. And I love to learn. I love to talk to people and learn about them and just have experiences that forces my thinking to either be wider or to challenge my ideas. And so a growth mindset really is about hearing and taking feedback and either evolving. And I'm sure this is part of because of my tech experience, we're always iterating, solutions or whatever, it's constantly evolving. Change is always a constant. And so as you're taking in that feedback, whether it's personal, professional, or from life, you challenge your thoughts. And so you're able to grow from what you learn by choice. You're not irritated by it, which let's be honest, it's hard. But you're open. You're open to hearing and to listening, and you're open to different ideas of possibility versus, life is like this or it's only like this. And so that growth mindset, if you start to really dig into it, there's a lot of big thinkers out there and tools, whether it's, emotional intelligence, positive intelligence, or even transformational presence. There's a lot of books out there and a lot of big thinkers that are talking about the power of the mind and free thinking, which is great. But I think in order to truly have a growth mindset, you also have to connect into your heart, because the brain is only one piece. You know, it's when you start to look at the full connection of the heart, mind, and body, you really get full connection, or what I call connected balance, because you're now tapping into your intuition. You're now tapping into your, you know, your feelings. And, you know, we all know that we've been told since day one, shut your feelings off. Don't take your feelings to work. And my thought was, eventually, why not? And there's plenty of people that are talking about mind-body connections and, you know, really managing all of it versus living in your head all day will kill you. I mean, we all know that voice in your head will run you into the ground if you let it. So, yeah. And I'm a recovering, you know, what's the word? Logical, you know, liver.
Yeah.
Vulcan.
I can so relate to that. And yes. And that is, it's not overstating it to say that living in your head all day will literally kill you. And I think that all, especially I know our listeners, because they wouldn't be listening if what our message didn't resonate, but even if we were to share it with others, I think that they can relate to that. And you started answering the next question that I had, and I believe this is what's going to bring us more into the connected balance piece of it, is that, you know, as you know, as many of our listeners know, the term growth mindset, the ideas around growth mindset, it's everywhere. And everybody has their own definition of it, and certainly they have a right to. It's great. It's awesome. Where it really kind of irks me and is actually a trigger for me is when people start weaponizing growth mindset and like treating it like, so one way that we've seen it show up in our clients is like, I want to get feedback. I need feedback, you know, to tell me what to do, you know, and it's like this, I need to have this negative feedback or else I can't grow. And then you're actually using it as a negative, as a weapon against yourself. Like you just end up beating yourself up. Like we tell our clients all the time, please stop beating yourself up. You really don't need that. So what is your take on this? This is where I think we're going to get into the balance piece of it. It's there is this balance that has to be achieved in order to fully embrace this, the growth mindset, but from a place of, yes, true growth. And maybe we might call it like a sense of neutrality in that growth, where we're not beating ourselves up, we're not beating other people up. That would certainly be one aspect of it for me. So what's your take on this piece of it?
So I think the balance is the key. And I think the challenge we all have is our negativity bias is hardwired. And so as that hardwiring in our brain is constantly negatively keeping us safe in our fight or flight, we're if we're aware of it, we're kind of trying to balance that out. And so one of the programs that I went through called Positive Intelligence was run by a PhDer from Stanford who identified our saboteurs. And so I was like, oh, schizophrenia with names, you know, and it was really interesting, but it talked about how the negativity bias in all of our heads, and the biggest one is the judge, which comes out and tells us about all the negative things we do. And then as a result, we either shut it off and go, yeah, you know, take a walk, or we listen. And then of course we get small and we have all these other problems because we believe it. And so I think to your point about finding that balance, you know, that's in there. We all struggle with it, but when you really connect into your heart and you listen to your body and the responses that your body tells us, your heart is going to help you balance that out, because that's where your empathy and your compassion and your love for yourself comes from, that works with the brain. And what's fascinating is, I don't know if you're familiar with heart math, but they've been around since 1991. And what they have found is that coherence between your brain and your heart is your killer weapon, because the heart's electromagnetic field is 5,000 times greater than the brain. So imagine if you put those two together and then you add the body on top of it and listen to somatics and things about what your body's messages are telling you, like when your stomach hurts or you get a sense of something's not right. When you have all three of those things connected, how could you not be in a curious mood to learn and have those growth mindsets? Because you're aware of everything around you, but you're grounded in yourself, in your own truth as far as what's coming in or what you're feeling, but you're present. And so I believe that that balance is that true presence, whether it's your head, your heart, your body, but when you're paying attention to all of those things, you absolutely can make better decisions. And there's research behind it to show that neuroscience will tell you that. And so I think it's just a matter of the hardest part about it is to take the pause, because we're all so busy. We're running from A to B. We got to do this. Our to-do list is long, versus that breath of, what do I really need to do right this minute? Or what's the most important thing I need to do today versus the to-do list that's back here hounding me that, you know what, maybe everything isn't a priority because then nothing is. And so it's finding that balance between what do I absolutely need to do? What do I want to do? And what's for my best good of the day? You know, because when you start to sift through and look at where you spend your time, all those shoulds, while you feel for the moment you have to, do you? And I think that's the hardest part, because we all feel responsible to, you know, show up and our bar's high and we're doing 50,000 things, but at the cost of ourselves. And I think that was the biggest wake up call for me. It was the physical crash. It's like, you can't, you want to believe the narrative, you can have it all. You can, but all can't be this list, because this list is going to kill you.
Yeah, so there's another one.
Right. Stress. I mean, I don't know how many doctors have to tell us that stress is the chronic, you know, baseline of most of our disease. And so if you continue to operate in that stressed environment or that stressful situation that creates that fight or flight all the time, and you're doing this all day, this is why you have anxiety. This is why you can't sleep. This is why you have all these other things that manifest, because your body is like this all day. That's not good. Just not physical. And you're not happy because it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into the how, practices, rituals, things like that. And the way that we often approach this is it's multi-layered. Look, there's no silver bullet. There's no magic pill that you can take that will suddenly make you not stressed anymore. For me, I've definitely found that over the years, it's, I'm going to dial it in even more. I'm going to dial it in even more. And then, you know, as we get older, as our external circumstances change, our habits and our rituals will change with them. So let's start with daily rituals. I know for me, and I know that the science backs it up, is that having a daily ritual, whether it's for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 2 hours, what have you, that every single day you have some kind of, call it a mindfulness ritual, call it a, we call it going to the mindset gym, right? You go to the physical gym. So go to the mindset gym, because your brain is important. So for you, if somebody's like, okay, I get it, I'm sold, I want to connect to my heart and my body more, what can I do on a daily basis in order to start doing that?
Well, we are creatures of habit. So being those creatures, routine is safer and feels better. I start with get sleep. I can't stress this enough. You need at least 8 hours of sleep.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so many people, oh, I'll sleep when I'm dead, or, you know, I'll take a nap later. It's that good sleep that rests your body and allows it to repair. So if you're starting on a deficit, now you're adding coffee and caffeine and whatever else you're doing. And so you're already starting, you know, the wired, you know, body reaction. So I would agree with you. There's needs to be some type of routine, and I have put sleep at the top of that routine. I think personally, coming from tech, less screen time, not because, you know, it's not cool and you can connect with people or whatever, but that buzz of that hit of, you know, oxytocin that, oh, I got a like, or I got a response or whatever. We used to live without tech. And you know what? We used to go outside and play. And I always go back to when I was a kid and I was like, there were no screens. Nobody was on email. Nobody cared what was happening on social media. And while that's wonderful because we have a whole big world now that we can connect with, it's killing us. It's creating anxiety. We have an increase in teen suicide. There's so many problems because people don't understand that social media is not real. It's not. It's a reality that's been created for monetary gain, connections, influencers, whatever. It is what it is. Just manage it. And just like people are addicted to games or screens or whatever it is, it's like, go outside. So I would say sleep, get outside. spend at least, like to your point, my mindfulness meditation, here's another thing I would think I would like to say is weaponized is yoga or meditation or sitting quietly. I'm a moving meditator. I do my best work in motion, whether I'm on a hike, in the pool swimming, on a bike ride, walking around. The more I'm moving, my body likes to move. And so my meditation is some kind of activity. Doesn't have to be a workout, but I need to be moving. So I would say your routine needs to be your own. Whether you like to sit and chant and get quiet and meditate on the floor, whether you like to go get a hike, or you are going to paint that morning, or you're going to do an ocean walk, whatever you're going to do, to your point, set your day up. Maybe you're a person who likes to read the Bible. Maybe you're a person who likes to just get quiet and create mantras or, you know, intentions or whatever. I don't think there's a good or bad. I think what happens is our society says, oh, you have to do this and you have to do this and you have to do this. And I'm saying, you know what? Go with the basics, get enough sleep, eat good food, and be mindful about what's happening with your day and what you need personally to show up as your best. And if that's screen time, if that's walking, if that's meditating, that's on you to figure out what that routine is. And don't let society tell you it has to be this, it has to be this, it has to be this, because we do a really good job of the rule set and pushing out what you should be doing. It's like, you know, your old school mom is, you know, or your mother is, you should be doing this. You know, it's like, you're an adult, figure out what that is for you, what feels right, and then do it, and do it every day. Because if that's what's going to set you up for the best day possible, why wouldn't you want that? Versus, you know, we all come to a day that is not the best day. We didn't get enough sleep. We, you know, skipped lunch, whatever it is. Great. Don't beat yourself up. Guess what? Tomorrow you got another chance. But I think that's the real piece of your emotional management. This is the piece I've learned. It's not about anything else out there. You can only manage yourself. So if your emotional energy is not in a good place, of course you're not going to have a good day, because you're going to walk around, you're either tired or you can't, you know, think straight or whatever it is. It's like, that's when you have to take a step and go, you know what? I need to take some personal inventory. I'm not operating good today. So what do I need to do for myself to get in a better headspace so I can receive what's coming in, versus pushing out and blaming everybody and being negative and crabby because you're having a rough day? I get it. It's hard, but that's on you. That's what adulting is. And it's funny to watch so many people's responses where I'm always like, I don't get critical, but I'm always like, wow. You know, there's like something missing as far as the tool set, which is learned. And, you know, you have to kind of show up and go, you know what? I don't really have to react this way, or I don't have to respond. Like, this is why we have memes about Karens. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to respond that way. This is where kindness, I think, really becomes more forefront, where it's like, you know, if we all treated each other a little bit nicer every day, regardless of where we are in our headspace, we wouldn't be killing each other with guns and arguing about politics and doing all these other things that are not productive. We would care more about our overall well-being and the well-being of others, because we could actually understand that, you know, we're all in the same boat doing the same thing, trying to have a great life.
Yeah, we're all on the same team. We really,
we
absolutely, we forget it so often. Like, people work at the same organization and they forget that they're on the same team toward the same goals. So I love that point about kindness. Before we leave the you know, sort of the general topic area around the how and the process and daily rituals and things like that, so I want to kind of make sure I'm like imagining two different kinds of people listening right now, and I want to make sure that they're both getting what they need. So I think that for the person who may be just starting out and is like, oh, wow, you mean this really is what adulting is? Adulting doesn't mean paying the bills and taking the garbage out. No, actually not. Adulting means taking care of yourself, your mind, your body, your spirit, and doing what you can with that. And I love this, getting sleep, getting outside, eating well, right? Like, start there. Like, yes, you're talking
basics.
Start with the basics. So then for that person who's just starting out, a question that we often get a lot, whether it's around this topic or anything really that involves process, is how do I know I'm doing it right? Like, for someone who's not quite yet
built the muscle of tuning into their intuition, tuning into their heart, their mind, their body, listening to what their own wisdom has to say. In the beginning, what would you say to someone? How do I know I'm getting this right?
Well, and I think that's the other construct we struggle with, right and wrong. And I'm not saying there isn't, you know, balance there as well, but who's to say what you're doing is wrong? Okay. What's right for you may not be right for me. And I'm okay in my own self that it's not. And so I think it's really more about getting inside and looking at your own self-confidence and what you need. It isn't about if it's right. Is it right for you? And if it's working for you, then it's right. If it doesn't feel good, then it's not. And so it's stepping away from the outer world that's telling you it has to be this versus trusting yourself to know or feel, hey, this is working. And trust me, if you really start to dial in, you'll feel it's not. And you'll go, you know what? This isn't happening for me and I'm not going to do this anymore. And I'm not saying you should step away from the routine. This is the growth mindset part. Receive the feedback you're getting from yourself or your surroundings, not the people, because they're going to tell you what they think, but for you to understand what feels best for you. And this is hard because we've been told to shut our feelings off. And so really getting grounded in what's right for you, listening to your own intuition, and really starting, you know, it's a lifelong experiment. There isn't a right way. And what feels right now, 2 years from now, right now, might not feel right. And so it's finding that balance inside and know that this is a lifelong journey. There's no right or wrong. And don't let other people tell you that whatever you do isn't right. Maybe it's not right for them. So who are they? You're your own master. So, you know, run it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what I hear you saying is if it feels good, it's working. And that's like
to a point like that. I wouldn't overblow that because people are like, oh yeah, it feels good. And you know, they roll over everybody else and they're on drugs or doing whatever, you know, it's not about make myself feel good. And I'm the master, but it's really about the mindfulness and the adult piece of managing yourself. Yes. To say, is this working for me? And if it's not, I need to do some more research and go figure out what is going to do for you. And this is what I find. Most people don't want to do the work. It's not that they don't, it's not important enough. They're too busy. I can't find time to do that. It's like, you can. If you're not important, if you personally are not important, what else is? Because eventually you're not going to be able to show up to do all the things that you want to do because you're not taking care of you.
Yeah.
It's that easy. I think the problem is that's not what we're told. That's not what society rewards. That's not what happens every day. It's not what social media dictates. And you kind of have to step away from the noise and go, maybe this isn't working for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love it. Love it. So one more question around this area, and then I want to turn it over to Rob and says, and hear what awesome questions I know he has for you, Kathy. But let's get to the other person. So we have the person who's like just getting started. Okay, I'm starting to tune into my intuition. I'm starting to really get that wisdom and receive that wisdom of what's working, what's not, and I'm going to adjust and I'm going to be a part of this long-term experience, this lifelong experiment with myself and what works and what doesn't. What would you say to someone who's been on this journey for maybe a little bit longer or maybe even years or possibly even decades? I know that it's, you know, obviously it's a very individual journey and it's going to depend a lot on somebody's individual desired outcomes, definition of success, definition of a great life and all of those wonderful things. But what do you, for more advanced practitioners of this, let's say, what advice, what guidance do you find yourself giving them more often?
So the most interesting thing I found lately, excuse me, is most of us have been in some kind of work situation, whether you're attached to a smaller company or a corporate company where they have core values. Or they have a mindset. We have five principles or five core values. This is how we operate. It gets everybody on the same page. Most people don't have personal core values. And so one of the things that I teach is a core values exercise for you. And this isn't new. Brené Brown is the queen who brought this back up and really started to look at, you know, speaking your truth and understanding what you need. And so I've really started to look at, and it's actually in my book, look at, you know, I didn't have core values until I did, until somebody said to me, hey, have you thought about, you know, your core values? And I started to look at once I knew what they were and I looked at situations and circumstances that I was in, it was really clear to make good decisions about, am I in alignment with this? And say, oh, I am, or I'm not, and I know I'm not, and I'm going to have a challenge, but I'm aware of what's happening here, so much so that I took a job last year because it seemed like a good idea with some people I knew from a previous life. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to do some fantastic work. And when I got in there, I know what my core values are. I got in there and I didn't factor in the math of the cost of that. And I knew it was going to be a short-term thing. I had a plan for it. You know, I was going to be just come in and do this while I was working on a separate project that was going to, you know, help me do that. And the personal cost to me from the stress and from the friction and then being in that environment was so detrimental, 6 months out. And it wasn't that it was a people problem. It wasn't, you know, the leadership was what it was, but it was the environment that I was not aligned. And that misalignment was I could start to feel my body every day, like getting out of bed. I was like, oh, I got to do this again. And it's just the friction and the awareness of this doesn't feel good versus how many times do we shut that off and we push through and we're like, oh yeah, I just got to do this. I got to put in my 8. And it's like, at what cost? Yeah. So I would say start with, and they're online, Brené's got an exercise, start with the core values and really get in touch with what's important to you. What are those 3 or 5 things, whether it's, you know, freedom, you know, whatever it is, and then start to use that as your barometer every day to start to see how you make decisions or what decisions you're making or what decisions maybe you need to change in areas of your life that are out of alignment. And it's not that it's bad. It's just, it's not working for you and you're just not paying attention.
Yeah. Oh, I'm smiling. I'm beaming right now because this is one of the things I've always heard my coaches tell me, figure out your core values. And I've always been, okay, here playing around with like, these are probably my core values. Sure. But even for someone like me as a coach, it's only in the last year. And I've been doing this stuff for decades, right? Studying this stuff. It's different from studying this stuff than being this stuff. It's only in the last year. I'll share mine just so that people can, like, it's not like, okay, steal my core values. Although certainly you could try if you want, but definitely check it.
Yeah, hope that works for you.
But yeah, like what I came upon, and it was really just more of a process of discovering and receiving as opposed to thinking about it. And for me, it's love, light, joy, prosperity, love, light, joy, prosperity. And I connect with that every single morning. And what I've been doing is exactly what you've said, is checking in, using it as a barometer. Is this in alignment? Are these actually, for first it was like, are these actually my core values? Yep. Yep. Yes. And yes. You know, like I can just keep getting more yeses. And then it's okay, I can use those core values as my guiding light to, you know, my boundaries, to my yes and no, to big decisions, small decisions, all of that. So yes, totally love that suggestion, that guidance to discover your core values. And if you believe you've discovered them already, maybe you can peel another layer back. Maybe there's more to it.
And I think that's really the key. It's been around forever, but it's the applicability that's been missing. And so when you look at, in fact, I would even offer this to you. So you have them. And one of the steps that I've been kind of evolving myself is looking at the opposites of those. And so when you have your 5, look at the opposite 5. And when these things show up, you know, without a doubt that you're not in alignment, but you at least now can recognize the opposites and go, oh, that doesn't feel good. Well, of course, because it's challenging my core value of such and such. And so when you actually have tools like this and you're aware of them, your decision-making becomes so much easier because usually you're making a decision based on what somebody wants you to do or what you feel is right or whatever, versus really knowing what's right for you. And then being able to articulate, you know what, I'm going to pass on this because this doesn't feel good for me for these reasons, depending on what you want to share about why. But at least you have the clarity and the knowing that that's not going to work for me for all the reasons I know, versus I'll try this. And then later not understanding why things didn't work out. Like when that job situation didn't work out, I knew exactly why. And I said, you know what? I took the risk. I knew what I was getting into. I had an agenda. And as a result, I took the hit. I'm not sorry. It was a clarity moment for me where I was like, I really need to pay attention to these things. like you said, you're always playing with them and experimenting with them. It's like, there's not a lot of runway on any of this stuff, because physically I'm at a point now where my body goes, nope. And I can't respond well to the environment when I'm not in alignment. Now, sure, can I push through and do all those things? Absolutely. Does that feel good? No. And am I at a point in my life where I'm going to do that? No. Life is short. I've watched too much crazy over the last 3 years with the pandemic and all the other crazy that's gone on. Unfortunately, I've lost my father to COVID. I'm like, life is so short. I am not going to compromise and sacrifice myself for what I'm trying to do or where I want to be, because it's just not worth it.
So beautiful. Really, really beautiful. Rob, what you thinking? What you feeling? What do you want to ask?
Well, a lot of what we talked about is getting into the core mindset of what has to happen and where you need to be, what you need to be intentional about, and sort of putting that framework in place. We often tell our clients that you can't out-strategy a disempowering mindset and you can't out-tactic a bad strategy. So with that in mind, I still actually kind of want to get into some more closer to tactical things. The things I want to specifically get into is, so there's two breaks that we're talking about here. There's a break when you've pushed yourself too far, trying to put in your eight, despite whatever else. Maybe you're trying to put in eight twice a day. Doesn't help anybody, but we do it anyway. We keep telling ourselves that we're the heroes in our story, but then we have all of these things that put us in the back seat and have the to-do list turn us into NPCs where we're not really driving the bus anymore. What is that first break where someone can see that they're heading down the wrong path and turn it around, possibly before they get to the physical endpoint where they just can't anymore?
I would say, at least in my own experience, we all talk about red flags. We see them, we ignore them. Sometimes they help us, sometimes they harm us, but the truth is they're there. And so if we're all honest with ourselves, on some level, we've been warned on that path. It's just a matter of whether we stopped and said, ooh, I see that. You know what? I don't think it's that big a deal, or I can get around it. Or, you know, we play this game with ourselves about, and I would say that about the flag or our intuition. Our inner voice goes, hey, you know what? And we shut it down. And so I think, you know, the reason we do get to the crash point is there's something we're supposed to learn, or we're obviously completely unconscious for the moment, because it happens. It happens to all of us. We get caught up in the moment or whatever. Like, I'm going to do that regardless. And then it doesn't work out, or we crash or whatever. And we're like, oh. So I think it's really more about, that's the presence piece, about paying attention to what's going on and the cues that you're getting outside and inside that says, am I really on the right path? Does this really make sense? And you know what? Sometimes we're not, but at least we're aware. And so, like I mentioned with the job situation, when I did hit the wall, I was like, yeah, see it, saw it, did it, own it. Yeah. Versus this kind of what happened moment where you're just like, how did this happen? And that happens too to all of us. We're human beings. Depending on where our emotional state is and how emotionally involved we are, because then we kind of cloud our own judgment by what's happening. So I think the trick is there's no bullet and no secret sauce, but you're so much farther ahead when you're paying attention. And it goes back to that autopilot where we're so overly focused on getting things done or getting to an outcome or driving some specific thing that we miss the cues along the way. It's kind of like, you guys have all been on a car trip where it's like, if you're slowly driving and talking and you're looking around and you're like, the passenger's going, oh, look at this, look at that, versus you're going 80 miles an hour down the Autobahn, probably 100, you don't see anything. And so you can decide how fast or slow you're going to go and how much you're going to pay attention.
Absolutely. And I think part of my concern and part of what leads people to, well, frankly, folks like us, is we have a nearly infinite capacity to recast those red flags as yellow flags, blow right through them. We were just having a conversation with my dad last night about ignoring a heart attack because he didn't want to wake my mom up at the time. Like,
right. Right. Never mind. That's really important.
Oh, well, and unfortunately, in our line of work, we know about people who they're a technician at a NOC, or they're a person who is watching critical infrastructure or is somehow involved in a big project, and they're recasting red flags as yellow all the time. I'll sleep when I'm dead kind of mentality. How do we get over the hump to where we stop being colorblind about those flags?
Love that, colorblind. Well, I think the biggest reality check for all of us is if you're in the hospital, which I've been in, you can't help anybody. So I'm not saying it's that drastic, but that's where you're going at some point. And so instead of waiting for the 2x4 across the head, why not take the pebble that's coming in that's saying, hey, and yes, we all are accountable and have these massive responsibilities, especially when you're running like a NOC, which I've been around and seen and know the criticality of that. But there's also, this is the human piece. It's like you're a better steward of your work or yourself if you can communicate. And this is what I think gets missed. It's all about communication. And that's kind of the roots of where I started my journey. I have a degree in public relations. And so it's really about being a good communicator and talking about, hey, look, I'm overworked, or hey, and if you're in an environment that's ignoring that, you have a bigger issue you need to look at. However, when you don't communicate that things are a challenge or you're having a problem, and I think we're seeing a lot of this with mental health. I'm sure you guys watched Friends. And so, you know, we're watching poor Chandler, unfortunately, finally has left us. And when you really look at what that whole mind process does about the negative thoughts and what happens and not managing that, that's part of the communication of, I'm good, I'm bad, I need some help, I'm overworked, I need a day off. It's okay to be human. And I think our society just teaches push, 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 go, 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 finish, win, you know, be successful. And it's like, sure, to a point. That's the balance of, if you're seeing that flag, making it yellow, it's red for a reason. Making it yellow is a cost to you. And I think if we can really start to look, instead of this thinking about yourself as narcissistic, instead of that kind of mentality, it's really about personal and self-care. You want to be at work and be your best. If you're having an issue, you're not going to be at your best. So better to voice that and be a little bit vulnerable to say, you know what? I'm not having a great day, or I need some time off, or whatever that is, and not abuse it as a crutch, which is of course the other side of the equation of, you know, I can never come to work because I have all these challenges, which that's a whole nother problem and another discussion. I think it's the authenticity and it's the realistic expectations of yourself and your communication skills to be that adult and say, look, I'm having a problem, or I don't agree with this. And can we look at this instead? So it's not complaining and shutting down. It's a new way to think and bringing new ideas to the forefront. I was big in that space, and I used to get slapped down a lot earlier in my career where people were saying, well, this, we're doing this, we're doing this. And I would say, have we thought about this with a new idea, with a new way to think about something? And sometimes it was received, and sometimes I would be told to be quiet. And so the bottom line is looking at the system you're sitting in personally, professionally, internally, externally, doing some quick inventory and saying, is this working or not? And what do I need to say? What voice do I have in a positive light that might impact the situation? And I think that's the difference on the colorblind situation of, if you're going to just spew more negativity, nobody's going to hear you. If you're coming from a place of grounded positivity or care and concern, most people who are healthy will listen.
It kind of flies in the face of a longstanding American narrative that being an adult means pushing through it and doing what's necessary and doing what you have to in order to, you know, do whatever the other things are. And that, you know, after retirement, we'll fix it all.
Right, which hopefully you'll make it to retirement, because you guys have seen the stats. People go, 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 go. They retire and then they die a year later because they haven't integrated the balance in their life to be able to shift. And so many people retire and then go, oh my God, now what am I going to do? And so it's not for a lack of want, it's that they haven't learned this balance outside of having a life that's not attached to your job, that's not filling you up, that everything you are is your career. And whether it's family, hobbies, personal, you know, interests, excuse me, whatever it is, you're out of balance. And I think we're all guilty of that at some point in our lives, or many times in our lives, because we get so sucked into whatever that is. And that's why I think, you know, connected balance, it's not easy. It's a daily exercise. But when you're aware of it, at least you're ahead of the curve slightly, where you can say, oh, I saw that, or, oh, you know what, maybe I shouldn't do that. Or, you know what, this doesn't feel good, versus autopilot.
Beautiful.
I think that's, you know, it's not the secret sauce, but it's definitely a more connected way to live that helps you feel a little bit more in control of yourself, because that's really all we can control is ourselves.
Thanks for giving me this quick moment for our sponsor, Coverage Cat. We're very intentional about who we allow to sponsor the People Stack podcast. And when I connected with the folks at Coverage Cat, I quickly learned that they are an excellent fit as a sponsor. If you live in Washington, California, Texas, New York, or Florida, Coverage Cat is a free concierge service that will help you find the best price and coverage for your umbrella, car, home, and renter's insurance. And yes, loyal tech leader audience, we know that most of you need insurance, whether it's umbrella or other insurance to protect your wealth. We know how annoying dealing with insurance companies can be. So we love how Coverage Cat is making this process super easy. Fill out one form and they compare across dozens of carriers to find you the best coverage and price while you skip the spam and sales calls. Get your free optimized insurance quote today at coveragecat.com.
And I kind of started this line talking about two different breaks. So there's the break when you realize you have to be intentional, you have to make some adjustments, some changes, you have to recognize that what you are seeing is a red flag or a yellow flag, you need to slow down, you need to stop, what have you. On the other side of that is another break where you cross over into actually being intentional about these things, actually taking these focuses, applying the tactics, the strategy, and the mindset toward your better fulfillment. I know that some of our listeners hear from Jen what's on the other side of that. What do you see on from somebody who has been paying attention to these things, from somebody who has applied the mindset, applied strategies, applied tactics, and is taking care of themselves like a modern adult should?
I think the other side of that is ease and peace. And I've spent most of my life on the hamster wheel. And so I have just a different mindset now where I don't wake up in the morning stressed. I don't have this should list in the back of my head every day. I mean, I absolutely have a million things to do as a business owner and clients and, you know, all the things that I'm trying to do in my workspace, but I approach it differently and I don't beat myself up when I can't get it all done, because there's only so many hours in the day, and a couple hours of those days, I'm going to be outside, whether it's, you know, moving, hiking, whatever I'm doing to commune with nature and feel better, because we just normally feel better when we're outside, if we are honest with ourselves. So I think, you know, there's no right way to do it, but I think once you find what's working for you and you're clear and grounded in what that is, I do think there's a personal piece about it where the clarity that you have is worth it, because you're not chasing the wheel and you're not spun up all day and you're not tight in the chest because you're in a flight or fight mode because you have all the stuff to do. It's like, if you were, and this is morbid, but it's true, and it's because of where I've been, if you were going to die tomorrow, does it really matter? And so now, I'm not saying that you should live in that mindset, but that's the reality check of what seems so important today. Is it? Like, I have a very close friend right now who is terminal, and you know, we were laughing last night at dinner and he was talking about Tuesdays with Maury, if you've read that book, and how it really gives people a different insight into what's happening on the, you know, latter end of the equation. And you really start to look at life in the present moment from someone who won't be here in 2 years. And it really helps you get concrete early and quickly about what's really important. People, connections, family, you know, what your work, you want to be somewhere that's, you know, feeling fulfilling and, you know, impactful, most people. And so it's that barometer of what's really important. And so I think on the other side of that equation, that's really where you can get up in the morning and go, do I feel like I'm where I need to be? And am I doing the work I want to do? And am I in a peaceful place personally that I don't feel like I'm not where I'm supposed to be, I'm not doing the right things, and I'm not really happy? And so I think that's the adulting piece of, if you're in that place where you're doing things you're not happy with, you have a choice and it's up to you. And while changing careers is hard or starting over is hard, it's possible. And especially now when, you know, everyone's a founder of a startup, so you can always pivot. You can always change course. You can always do anything you want to do. Might not be, you know, tomorrow, but wouldn't you rather be happier in that motion of moving towards what you want to do versus being trapped in, you know, a situation that doesn't feel good? And I know we've all stayed in that place because it's easier. Mm-hmm. It's easy to show up every day and just do what you got to do and be done with it. That's really a hard way to live. And I just have decided I'd rather be and move towards what feels better for me and where I can use my talents and gifts in the best way possible, because otherwise why right. bother?
It kind of seems like a forehead smacking obvious statement to make that you should be
it
happy.
It does, but it's hard.
Right. And you should do the things that make you happy. And when you're spending 40 plus hours a week on something, a third of your day, you should do it with something that's making you happy. And if it's not, pushing through it wins you no awards.
You know what? That's the thing. There are no awards. There's no, you're not getting up to where, whatever you believe in and whoever is your God, you're not getting up to the top of the staircase and you're getting the award for, you know, the most you work, the most volunteer or, you know, hours, the most times you went to church. You're not, there's no awards for all that. And so I think, you know, if the pandemic taught us anything, at least in this country, we really are out of balance. We needed a great reset on our own being in terms of, you know, our connections with people, what's important to us. And I'm not just saying family, because yes, everybody sheltered in place with their family, but there's so many things part of our ecosystem that we lose sight of because we're too busy on autopilot, that it really is worth that, to your point, Jen, that 15 minutes every day to get grounded in whatever way you need to say, this is what I plan to do today, and this is how I'm going to make the best use of my time, because you can exit tomorrow and you want to have been somewhere that you feel like you were actually doing what you wanted to do versus being on somebody else's script.
It's so seductive, though, to be on someone else's script, because they're doing all the heavy cognitive lifting of what could and should
Absolutely.
Be or what's important.
And I think that's the trap. That is the trap. It's like, you know what? I can just show up every day and just do that. But then you have to ask yourself, are you really happy? And if you're one of these people, you're like, oh, the happiness is a state of mind, it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. Well, great. Then that works for you. But we kind of know, based on where we've been and how we've lived, that happiness comes from within. It's not from other people. People compliment it. But at the same time, that's up to you. If you want to live like that, that's totally up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're honest with yourself, it's probably not working.
That is so, so true. And, you know, one of the things that I do from time to time, because sometimes it feels overly morbid to me, but whenever I do it, I do achieve that peacefulness is, if I die tomorrow, would I be good?
Exactly. And you hate to go there, but you know what? It really helps you get clear on what's important. Like I did a lot of global work where I would drop into countries and do different things for internet access. And, you know, I worked with a nonprofit for a couple of years that was really eye-opening because every time I came back home, I just felt like I had too much stuff. I felt like I had so much that they had so little. And it helped me to reframe. It's like, you know what? We don't need all the things we're told we need, the cars, the houses, the boats, the money, the this, the that. It's like some people on the other side of the world can barely eat. And I'm not saying that that is like a recipe for how you build your life. I'm just saying it's an awareness of we really have a lot in this country, and we're very blessed to have what we have. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we have to keep pushing ourselves to the point of sickness or illness because there's some idea back there that better, stronger, faster, I'm nothing unless I succeed. And I think that's part of the big lie where, you know, keep pushing yourself. And it's like, if you look at the people in the villages have the simplest life, they're so much happier. And you're like, what are we missing? So I would challenge you to look bigger and look outside and look at and take some personal inventory.
Those villagers, their iPhones are like old.
I know. And you know what? They're doing just fine.
They are.
And they probably don't have Instagram pages or are on TikTok. And I'm not saying, you know, social media has a place. Technology has a place. It's amazing that we can do what we do today. And I'm thankful because it makes life a more modern convenience. Who doesn't want to order what they want tomorrow and have it show up on their door? Thank you, Amazon. We all use it, but balance. I think it gets back to balance. If you look through history, we've all been chasing balance every century, every era, because we don't have it because it's hard. It's work. And I'm here to tell you it's real work because I've seen both sides of this coin. And I think these are part of the life lessons that, you know, you can choose to use to your advantage or you can ignore them. That's the beauty of having a free thinking society.
Yeah. I have not written a book yet. The key word being yet. And I've always toyed with the idea if it's going to have to do with balance somehow, because ever since, probably since I was a little girl, but certainly in my academic career, I studied work-life balance. So I want to ask about balance. And balance is a term, and there's definitely, you know, there's some fun intellectualizing and even philosophizing we can do around this, but it's also a very practical question as well. Because even when I was doing research, and this was probably 10 or 15 years ago, there was this whole work-family balance boom in the organizational literature. What is work-family balance? How do we measure it, first of all, and then how do we achieve it? And then it started being called work-life balance. Okay, great. But then there was almost like this, the pendulum swinging in the other direction. Balance? I don't know if I want to call it balance. Can we actually achieve balance? So people started playing with work-life integration and other kinds of terms, work-life synthesis. And even now, one of my mentors talks about balance is a great term, but I like harmony better. Just because like for her, the idea of balance, depending on how you define it, right? It's like you might be picturing an actual balance, like one of those old school scales where it's equal. Yep. And that's actually not what we're talking about, that like you're giving the same amount of energy and attention to work and the rest of your life. Actually, that's not what it is. So I'm curious, both by way of, you know, intellectual curiosity, but also because it's very practical, what led you to this balance concept and why is it so important in our lives? I think we've been talking about it already, but let's just hit the nail right on the head.
Sure. Yeah, I was out of balance. That's the truth. And I started to really look at my patterning as far as, you know, too much work, too much this, too much. And I'm a high energy person. And so it's really easy for me to get involved in something and then 150% I'm in at the cost of whatever, because I get excited and, you know, I don't want to sleep because I'm like a 5-year-old going, oh, it's fine. So, you know, and I grew up in a house where, you know, my father was a football coach for 56 years. And so there was a lot of this, you know, work hard, win. And so I grew up in that work hard, win to a point where I'm so thankful for that skill set, but I realized it almost killed me. And that was my own doing because I was so passionate about what I did that I realized I was always at 150% for everything, which is not manageable. It's not sustainable. And so whether it's sleep or whatever eventually catches up, then you start to have physical problems and things. And so I used to channel most of that through sports. I played sports and still do, you know, I'm a lifelong sports person. And so then I eventually learned that I was channeling that extra energy through sports that would help me balance my physical self. And so then started to look at, okay, if I could find better harmony between my energy at work and my energy outside of work, and actually take that inventory to say, I am really tired, maybe I shouldn't, or, hey, you know what? I'm going to take a day off, and gave myself permission, which was the hardest part. To your point, the balance is really what that means to you. And I would agree the scale is old school, but people can at least, you know, visualize it, but it is more about that harmony. And I think it's really more connecting to yourself, because when we're driven as hard as we are, we're disconnected from ourselves because our body is telling us something. We're just like, oh, have another cup of coffee, or, you know, I don't need sleep, or whatever it is. And so finding that connection inside to trust that your body knows better than anybody else, or that you're important enough to take a nap, that doesn't make you a lesser of a person. It's getting back to really physical needs. You want to go back to Maslow and say, yeah, are my basic needs getting met, or have I put my career, my family, my whatever in front of me? And so I didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to write a book about all this. I think as I was literally laying on the bathroom floor one night, I said, there's got to be a better way. And after I kind of came out of that, I thought, these are tools that everybody can use. And I'm just aggregating them of 20 years of experience that hopefully they help somebody else, not because I've figured it out, but I've done a ton of research to try to help myself. So here is the compilation of, and because I am a curious learner and I dig down in a lot of things that aren't mainstream, like transformational presence, where you look at your outer world and how it is affecting you on an energetic level, that's a different way to look at things. And so most people aren't looking at that. So my intent to write that book was to serve up some new ideas. And so people could have a Scooby moment and go, huh? Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Not because I haven't figured out, but here's a list of all kinds of things to think about if you're interested, and books that you can read if you want to learn more, or people that you can read up on or read their books if this isn't interesting to you. And then you can find your path. And if you're happy and life's working out for you, great, this isn't for you. But I think a lot of us over time, we're struggling or are still struggling with misalignment, or I'm not where I want to be, or this career isn't really working for me. And it's like, well, what do? It's overwhelming to think about change at that level because it's a macro change. But starting out small with some of these basic tools, like your 15-minute check-in every day, there's no reason you can't do that. I don't care if you're married, single, you have children, you don't. 15 minutes, you could do that while you're in the bathroom. You know what I mean? It's like you just have to be open and willing to want to shift, change, and learn. And I think to your point, Rob, that's the hardest part. That's the work. It's easy just to keep doing the same thing you're always doing. That's why everybody keeps doing
it. Yeah, and we're talking about the concept of adulting through all of this. And what is funny for me, entertaining, is that we're also talking a lot about permission. And the glory of being an adult, growing up at least, was that you're not going to have to ask permission, but we're not giving ourselves permission to do the things that we became adults to do.
Right. It's like that rule book in the head, like the parent is still up here going, you can't do that. In fact, I met somebody last week and we were joking about how when we grew up, we couldn't have sugar cereals. And, you know, most parents want to, you know, do right by their children, give them a balanced meal. You're not eating whatever. And we both laughed because when we got to college, we ate sugar cereal for dinner because we could, because now we had the opportunity to do that. And we were laughing because we were both Captain Crunch fans. But my point of all this is That's the beauty of being an adult. You don't need permission. Now, you do have to take responsibility for your actions and your behavior. That's the other side of that. But that's the whole point of being an adult. It's an amazing experience if you're grounded and doing what you should be doing for you, and you're not harming others or, you know, taking advantage of others or whatever. And that's, to me, what's so exciting about getting up every day and going, today's another adventure. What do I get to do? Because I don't have to ask permission. And what I have found across my journey is that's irritating to people, certain people. And I become friction for them because I don't take it personal, but I realize you have a rule set in your head or a belief system that you can't do those things. And because I'm doing them, you're annoyed or resentful to me because I get to do what I want. And my response to that is, so do you.
Yeah.
You have the same choices that I do. You just choose either not to exercise them or you don't feel you can. And that's on you. That's not me. So I've, you know, come across friend groups and relationships and, you know, even marriages or whatever that, you know, if I'm an irritant to you, that's a mirror for you. Cause I'm me doing what I need to do for me. And I like to think I'm usually pretty kind as far as being aware of how I affect other people and what my behavior does to or for them. I try to show up in a positive way. That's the growth mindset of I'm going to show up positive every day, and I'm going to leverage that positivity for, you know, the karmic response or the energetic response of the law of attraction that I'm going to put out and get back what I put out, which is positivity. I'm not interested in the teardown factor or making you feel small or doing any of those things. And so from a permission perspective, yes, we all have permission to do what we believe is right for us within the confines of, you know, not harming others. And I think that's what's even more concerning in today's environment, without getting into, you know, all the crazy that's going on, is if your behavior is starting to harm someone else, I don't care if it's, you know, politically, culturally, whatever, you really have a bigger issue. And that's not okay. And that's been happening for hundreds of thousands of years. But I also think we can stop and take a moment to say, I don't have to respond in that way, or I don't have to act like that. And if we all really did show up as adults and did take responsibility for our behavior and our mental health, imagine the world we could live in. And that's what I'm putting out as far as, you know, I'm hopeful that I'm on the planet to see some of that shift, because right now we're still stuck in this strange place of, you know, treating people poorly and feeling like we're entitled and we can walk all over everybody. And I kind of laugh. I'm like, you weren't raised that way. And if you were, there's a missing link, because at the end of the day, the basic golden rule is still applies. Okay. I don't care what era it is, what time it is, what culture you are, what planet you're on. Treat others as you want to be treated.
See, I had the other golden rule in my head. He who has the gold makes the rules.
Well, those two rules definitely compete on a regular basis. They really do.
And it's good that we're not talking about the crazy of the day, because by the time this gets released, it's going to be a completely different slate of crazy.
But that's the thing, Rob. There's been crazy of the day since time began. So it's like, if you want to get sucked into the crazy of the day, just wait, it'll change. But you can
like bet England
there
weather.
Will always be crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. So choose a different path. Step away from the crazy. They're still going to be there doing what they do.
That's right. And I was thinking about the golden rule too, and relationships, how doing all of this work, doing the adulting, has such positive effects on relationships and this ability. You know, I'm thinking about boundaries, being able to put up our own boundaries, being able to relate to people with neutrality. So the example that came to mind, actually, as you were describing the person who was like triggered by what you were saying, but you were doing your best to be kind and they didn't like what you were saying, and that's more of a reflection on them. The way that we often get this when working with clients is clients will come to us, and even after working with them for a while, and especially after working with them for a while, because we get to know them, that's what's important here.
Yeah.
Like, they'll come to us and they'll say, my boss said I'm a poor communicator, so how can I fix that? Oh my gosh, there's so much wrapped up in that question. We get it a lot, particularly from non-native English speakers, but even from other folks as well who speak English as their first language and learned it as their first language. Often, and of course,
context here, and we're going to be honest, if we believe that there's an opening for better communication, we probably would have talked about that already week one or week two. But often it's, hang on a second, do you believe that feedback was for you, or was that a reflection of what your boss's world? Because my experience of you is that you're a perfect communicator. We've had some awesome conversations. And has there ever been a time when I've said, I have no idea what you're talking about? No, right? So it's be careful about what like feedback you're getting from other people, and what other people say that you need to work on. That's part of the checking in. Like, I know I'm doing this work, I'm owning it, and that just doesn't feel like it's about me. That's not me, that's you. And then the ability to be able to communicate that in a compassionate way, and also in a confident way, and assertive, compassionately assertive way, is really just, it's so fabulous for relationships. So that's one of the other things, like to Rob's question, like what's on the other side of this? Yes, more peace, more joy, more love, more light, joy and prosperity, right? But also even better relationships with, yes, at work, but like with those you love as well. So I just love that you shared that.
I can't even echo that any more than, I mean, yes, because what I have found is, you know, when you're an example of what you want or what you hope to be, you attract the same. And so I've met so many wonderful people who are more grounded, who are more focused on others, who, because that's what I'm doing. And so people who are similar in that mindset show up, because the people who are not in that mindset don't want to be around me, or I don't want to be around them. And so it's a natural selection process. Plus, I also think, you know, not everybody is a good boss. And I've been a boss. I've been, you know, worked for a boss. I've had so many roles in leadership, out of leadership. And the truth is, I think the stat is like 85% of people leave jobs because their boss is not effective or supportive or whatever. And so when they feel threatened, what do? They tell you you have a problem to keep you off your game. So, you know, you are kind of like, oh, and, or they see something that maybe is their blind spot, or they're trying to help you. But I think if that is the case, my response to that person would be, really, can you give me an example why, or what do you believe I should be doing? Because then you can get a better sense of what is their perspective. And to your point, is it environmental because of the where they sit in the company or what's happening? Because there's always so many different perspectives that go into people's feedback. It's just like when somebody, I'm sure you guys have had this experience, somebody has says to you, oh my God, you need to try this restaurant, it's amazing. And you go and you're like, this isn't amazing. What is this? And for them, it was. And whatever it was, whether it was the food, the experience, the person they were with, whatever made that an amazing experience for them, you don't have the same experience. So it's just like if somebody tells you, well, you're a poor communicator. Well, is it because you're a poor communicator and we can't communicate? Or is it because your idea of communication looks like this and my idea looks like that? And so that opens up the bigger dialogue, I think, instead of feeling personally attacked, which is what we're trained to do. Oh, I'm a problem. What did I do? How do I fix it? Tell me more. Tell me what I need to do, versus explain to me why you think that.
Yeah.
Or why do you feel that this is true? I'd like to understand more. And it's difficult. That's a learned response versus feeling personally attacked and then, you know, push back. So I think if we could all communicate more openly and honestly about what's happening, whether it's personal, professional, you know, romantic, whatever it is, I mean, communication truly is the path to really be heard, seen, and whatever you need. Because if you can't communicate or you're not being heard, and some people, you know, shut people down on purpose, but if you're in that supportive environment, communication is the best tool, because you can ask the right questions, you can dialogue, you can discuss. Then you actually are on common ground. I think the biggest challenge we're all at is we're not on common ground anymore, for all the reasons that are obvious. And so getting back to common ground and then having a real discussion, now you can make progress. And it's amazing when it's positive versus a negative reaction, you're going to get more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
You have a choice.
Mm-hmm. And I love how this keeps coming back to curiosity. Curiosity, looking for values, maybe that's one of them for you, if you have five core values, right? Like that genuine sense of curiosity and teaching yourself, learning how to respond that way, as opposed to the learned helplessness way. Oh, that's curious.
I'm curious, tell me more. Why did you say that? It really does take practice to be able do that, especially like even if it's something small, like something that's meant to be negative feedback or even positive feedback, but especially like if someone calls you a name or is yelling at you, to really just say, oh, that's interesting.
Right, right. It's like, what can I learn from this? Either you're emotionally unhinged or I need to stop coming here. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of things you can learn from, but we emotionally respond all the
time. Or I shouldn't take your restaurant recommendations.
Yeah. Right? Well, I usually bet, but, and I give you reasons why, but even so. But yeah, you're right, because we're reactive. We are very reactive creatures, and it's work to kind of go, huh, and then feel what you need to feel. And I'm not saying shut your emotions down, but we emotionally react to a lot of things, and that's learned. And, you know, that's something when we talk about emotional energy and people who react negatively versus positively, and if they're renewing or draining, this is all about the awareness and, you know, self-regulation, which, you know, self-resiliency is another learned skill.
Absolutely.
And it's not something, in fact, I would love it if they'd start teaching it in grade school and high school. I mean, HeartMath is really on a trajectory to try to do that, because it's not that it's the right way. It's an awareness of self and what your environment is doing to you or for you in terms of your positive response to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have one more question for you, Kathy, and then I'm going to go back to Rob to see what he has. And you opened the door there. So thank you for inadvertently when you said awareness of self, because I was going to ask about spirituality. Mm-hmm. What role do you believe spirituality plays in all of this that we're talking about?
My perspective on it is I don't understand how we can be on this planet and think there's not a higher, greater good. So whether it's whoever your God is, and whatever religion or spiritual sect you live in, or whatever that is for you, there's too much out there on this planet to show you that there's a bigger universal energy that we're all connected to. Whether you agree with that or not, that's, you know, where you come from, but there's too many signs, too many things if you look for it. And, you know, what category you put it in based on what you've been schooled on, like I was originally raised Catholic, you know, Jesus is an example of what we're absolutely talking about in this universal law. And I think the bigger challenge is when you don't look at the fact that we're all human beings looking for the same things and all connected at some level, that's where you start the breakdown of I can treat you like this, or you need to die, or this doesn't work. And I think that spiritual connection that comes from that greater source, when tapped into however that looks for you, that's where the peace comes from, because we're all connected on an energetic level. If you look at that from the quantum physics or the spiritual side or the religious side, and it's not about a book of rules, it's about energy. And we're all part of that energy. And there's science now to back all that up. And you can get, you know, that's a whole nother rabbit hole. But it goes back to the basics of we're all connected. And if we believe that, our behavior shifts. And if you start to look at my brother, my sister, my community, my neighbor, and then you start to look at they want the same things, and this isn't, you know, a feel good moment, this is a fact, that would shift societal behavior all the way around. The challenge is, this is the way that our construct has been set up for thousands of years. And so then you get into the idea of, well, this is Earth school and we come here to learn our lessons and all those kinds of things. But the bottom line is when you're connected to the energy source, you feel better, you're more positive, and you care about what's going on around you and the people in your life, or the people that aren't in your life that are struggling because they need some help or a hand up or something, versus I'm shut off, I don't care, those people don't affect me. Yeah, but those people are sisters, brothers, mothers. Those are also human beings. And so it's just really about that mindset around, if we're not all connected, I mean, it's such a bigger, you know, cosmos discussion of, it doesn't make sense if we're not. It just doesn't logically or emotionally. And so when you start to look at, you know, things in your life, whether it's illness or family members that pass or whatever, you start to see that bigger, greater good. And you start to actually see the connections. And you, if you look for them, you can see the signs. And so that's up to each person individually to decide, you know, what path they're on and which God they're going to support. And all I'm saying is, think about the bigger picture is, regardless of what that looks like, we're all in that same bucket, trying to connect, trying to do what we want to do. And one way is not right or wrong or better or worse. It's just where you come from. And because the world is as big as it is, of course, there's going to be different variations of everything. Because, I mean, if we're all in divine likeness, of course, it's all different because we're all going to have different experiences. So I'm at a point in my life where absolutely spiritually connected in terms of that bigger, greater good, and have seen so many things shift in my life because of it, but I don't put a label on it. I look at it as universal energy or connection. And I have stepped away from organized religion by choice, but that doesn't mean that I don't think about the greater good or other people or how things work. I don't directly support only this, only that. It looks like this. It can be that. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And what it also feels like in a wonderful way is another permission slip to be spiritual.
Absolutely.
And it's like, hey, if you, whatever it was that you grew up with, if you want to continue that because it feels good and it's working for you, great. But if you want to, and if you want to change religions, or if you want to switch from being following a particular religion to being more spiritual in general, I think, you know, I've received that permission slip from many of my friends, and I'm so grateful for it. Like, I was tiptoeing around it for so many years. It was probably about, call it 7-8 years ago, where I just dived straight in. It's like, okay, cool. Absolutely. There is a greater energy, you know, absolutely. Like Star Wars got it right. There is a force that surrounds us, penetrates us, and guides us. So when I just dove straight into that, like it really did change my life. Not overnight, but you know, slowly but surely. So yeah, if you're someone out there who's like, yeah, you know, I kind of want to lean more into the spirituality and talk more about it, and like we talk about, hop on the woo-woo choo-choo. Yeah, do it.
Well, and you know what, Jen, that's the key. Go do your research. I've been in and out of so many different churches. I went to Israel. I read books. I did so much research for myself to go, what is working for me? Like, what feels right? What is the construct for me that I need to attach to? But I spent years looking, learning, talking, visiting. And then I arrived at this place and I was like, you know what? I'm good with it. It feels right for me and it's working for me and it's not harming anybody else. And oh, by the way, it's definitely changed my life. So this is where I'm going to stay. But it didn't come without the time in. And I think that's the problem, goes back to what we said earlier with Rob about, it's easy just to go to church and believe what they believe. If it doesn't resonate, but that's how I was raised and this is what I need to do. It's like, yeah, but are you really growing and learning from it? Or are you just going on the, you know, the routine, Rob?
No, but I get presents every Christmas.
Well, right. And you know, don't even get me started, but yeah, I just think it goes back to this right and wrong idea. Why can't it just be and? It's not either or, it's and. And why can't we be inclusive all the way around? Because if the universal law is so all of us can come to this place and learn and be loved and connected, okay, it doesn't have to be that hard. But, you know, we have all these rules and these, you know, it's been set up for generations like this. So I'm challenging you to think differently. Step out, do your own research, figure out what's right for you. And just because you were raised a certain way or a belief system or a cultural nuance, I'm not saying they're wrong. Are they right for you? Do you really believe it? And if you do, great. But don't be caught up in the autopilot.
Love it. Love it. Rob?
Well, my personal research has brought me to being a conductor on the woo-woo choo-choo. And we talked about this with in the podcast with our mutual acquaintance, April Wenzel. And part of my journey, or a large part of my journey, was I love looking at things that are they've grown up in completely disparate parts of the world. So every part of the world has a belief structure that has these kinds of components in it, even though we've never
and they're all similar.
Right, right. Yeah. The number of similarities between so many of these completely disparate things is remarkable. Yep. It's silly. Some would say it's crazy.
What does that tell you?
It tells you that, you know, either
something,
either there were aliens around that were indoctrinating all of these different cultural civilizations and they left no trace, or as Occam's razor might suggest, there's something else that connects us that isn't bound by space and time.
100%.
So,
right. That's why, how can you dispute it?
Right. So everybody has, all of our listeners now have permission to become the conductors on their own woo-woo choo-choos. And the best part about those tracks and the stations are that you get to define them. And
get your conductor hat and get on your own
train. Yeah, and if nothing else, it feels good to just pump your fist and say woot-woot. I mean, who doesn't love that? Who does that and doesn't smile?
Absolutely. Right.
Well, and that's the permission to have fun. You know, when you start to look at what's happening tomorrow and you start to say, you know, yeah, I'm an adult and I put on a costume. It's Halloween. It's like, go out and have some fun. Get on your woo-woo train. Be okay with who you are and stop feeling bad about society's telling you to stop doing that.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
one of the questions I have whenever this kind of thing comes up is, what if you could think of a foundational memory that sort of brought you to your own brand of woo-woo, what would you tell?
Foundational memory that brought me to my woo-woo.
We asked the hard questions here, guys.
So when I was, you asked, when I was probably 6 or 8, you know how kids go through that phase where they like to dress up in costume? I never stopped. And so I had this imaginary land where people would come to our house for visits or whatever, and I would dress up like a character. And it was funny because I'm sure my mother was probably like, oh, she'll grow out of it. And so it was this playtime for me to just have this experience. First of all, it was funny because I wanted to see the look on the faces of the people who came in the house, and I was dressed up and it was always something different, you know? And so I wanted to have fun. I wanted to slightly entertain. And at the same time, I wanted to learn from the environment. I didn't know all this as a child, but I am an experiential learner. I've learned later that I wanted to see what would happen. Because I knew it was relatively safe. You know, I wasn't, and my mother had known enough at this point that I wasn't going to get grounded or in trouble. In fact, they probably started to be like, what is she going to do this time? You know? And so even now my mother's always like, I wonder what she's going to, you know? So it was kind of that permission to be who I am, to be fun. It became this open invitation to, she's kind of nutty, but you know, it was funny, so it was acceptable. And then I think it really just opened the door to this creative side of me where I just didn't care what people thought. And I think the hardest thing in today's society is people are constantly providing criticism and direction about what people should be doing based on their, you know, warped sense of perspective versus everybody needs to decide for themselves what they need to be doing. And so that permission slip, whether it's the woo-woo conductor or whether you want to be, you know, whatever, that's about your life and you running your life. We've come full circle is you're the boss of you. And don't let anybody take that away from you. Not your boss, not your wife, not your husband, not your parents, not your siblings, not your friends. It's like you get to be an adult. And that's the beautiful thing about being an adult on this planet. While our society is teaching us all kinds of different lessons, you get to make the choice about what you're going to do with that information and how it's going to impact your life. And so if I decide as a middle-aged adult, I want to continue to put on costumes outside of Halloween, I'm going to do that. Because you know what? I'm that lighthearted, fun person who wants to bring fun and positivity to an environment, not suck the life out of it. We all know those people. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just really about getting comfortable in your own skin and being okay with that. And don't listen. Obviously, take in the feedback you need to hear, But know what's right for you based on what you believe and what's grounded truth for you and your authenticity, not what somebody is telling you.
We call that cosplay now, by the way, when you do it outside.
We do. And there's a whole, right. You can go to the they're around the country. I believe they're, I think the conference is back online. I mean, yeah, that's a little bit different than what I'm talking about, but I think that was the defining moment where I realized, in fact, it was probably harder for my parents because I had a pushback a lot where I was like, most kids wouldn't do some of the things that I did. Not that I was ridiculous, but because I wasn't afraid and I was open to take risks. And so I was constantly, I was probably more of a concern where I was like, what's she going to do? Like, you know, and so looking at that was an early stage of, I was able to keep everything else at bay and not listen to the noise about what happened. And as a result, I really could be myself and do what I needed to do. And did I always know? And did I have paths in my life that I woke up and said, you're not who you are? But the good news was, is when I did wake up and be honest, I'm like, this isn't who you are. And I knew that. And I could go, you know what? It's time to pivot back to do whatever I need to do. I had gotten off track, but I still knew. And it was, like you said, it was a red flag that I made yellow, but I knew it. And so I only had myself to blame. And I think that's the key of taking your own responsibility for your own behavior instead of doing this all the time. Go, oh yeah, I did do that. And I'm sorry. Or I need to own that and move on, because we're all human. And I think how you treat yourself is how you should treat other people. And hopefully that's a positive cycle all the way around, because I think that's when you can really start to see unhealthy behavior.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, such a beautiful way, I think, to end this conversation, Kathy. Thank you for being vulnerable there and sharing your life, sharing your love, and just sharing so many positively inspiring, fun stories. We are all about that here. So again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
And thank you both. This has just been a joy. This is the kind of work I love to do.
Yeah, game on. All right.
Fun for us too.
That's a club. That's a meetup. The Woo Woo Train Conductors. It's coming. Go. Coming to a studio.
Can't wait.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
And that wraps up another episode of the People Stack Podcast. Thanks for listening and for supporting our mission. We are all helping to positively transform the tech world, one tech leader at a time. I have so much gratitude for all of you, for our badass clients, our loyal listeners, every one of you who we've worked with. And I have to give a special shout out to my husband, Rob Allen. He's my co-CEO, the love of my life, PeopleStack Client Zero, and it is such a fun ride, finding new, ridiculously unreasonable levels of prosperity, joy, and fun with him every single day. And a quick thank you to Ketza for creating the catchy, inspiring theme music that we get to use in our podcast. We love each and every one of you. Big, big hugs. Aloha and mahalo.